Okay, we've cracked this whole thing wide open here.
You heard it here first, the Superbind podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern podcast. What a topsy-turvy 10 days it has been for Bayern Munich, who last Friday smashed Schalke 8-0, but today lost to Hoffenheim 4-1. Beyond that, the Bavarians looked set to sign Sergiño Dest at the beginning of the week, but it's now clear they won't be getting their main right-back target, and they could be even losing a few more players with just a week left to find replacements. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about all of that with my friends Garrett Kerber.
Hello, hello.
And Tim Richards.
Hello there.
Well, while it's fresh on our mind, I guess we should start with the disappointing game from earlier today, because Bayern Munich last week started the Bundesliga season with just a domination of Schalke 8-0. Things were looking good. Bayern were flying high. And then today, they just kind of almost fell apart against Hoffenheim. And I know, Garrett, you didn't get to catch all of that game, fortunately for you. But Tim and I both definitely endured all the way through it. And I know that because, you know, Tim was doing the live tweeting through Mia Sanrot. And after Hoffenheim went up early, we both kind of said the same thing in the chat at the same time. That was like, you know, well, it's not totally undeserved for Bayern to be behind. So, I mean, Tim, what went wrong today? How did the Bayern team that were so dominant last weekend just fall apart today?
I think it's very interesting situation. As you said, this, like, their goal was fully deserved, and the fact that they got four goals, I probably even go so far as to say that they deserved more. Like, they were a team that came out ready to attack. They had a lot of chances. They had more chances than are normally gifted to an opposition, and they took them. They even missed many of them. Like, they were just absolutely relentless. It was a very Bayern Munich inspired performance. Sadly, not from the team that is Bayern Munich. It was very much a novelty in that sense. I think what happened in this game is something that has threatened to happen for quite a while now. There seems to be this pattern of Bayern will concede a chance. Maybe not concede, but like they'll give up the opportunity, or like they'll present the opportunity for their opponent to score quite early on. And then sometimes, like 9 times out of 10, Bayern will then kind of like they'll wake up and then they'll say, okay, let's do this seriously now. So it happened against Lyon. It happened against Barcelona, where I think Bayern conceded early, and then like a couple of chances early on. I think it was the own goal. Or did Bayern score? Either way, they gave Barcelona the opportunity to take the lead. Then against Lyon, there was that chance with where Depay hit the post, I think, where Neuer and I think it was Alaba kind of like just did enough to put him off. Then against PSG, there were a number of opportunities right at the start where it looked like Bayern could potentially go down 2 or 3 goals quite early on. And then, okay, these games did kind of end up going in Bayern's in their favour. But then even against Schalke, in the first minute, Schalke almost scored 2 goals. Well, like they had 2 really good chances. And I've said this before, it was kind of alarming, but it was like, oh, cool, Schalke are here to play this year. That didn't really work out very well. Like, they ended up conceding 8 goals. But even then, it looked like Schalke kind of could potentially get an early lead. And then against Sevilla, Bayern conceded a couple of early chances and then eventually conceded a goal to Sevilla. This isn't new. This is something that's been happening for at least like the last few months. But I can remember a couple of seasons ago we were talking about this, where Bayern are just kind of, they're not awake for the first like 5-10 minutes. And then it kind of puts them at a disadvantage, and it means that they're constantly having to go uphill. I think this was a case where they weren't awake for the first 5-10 minutes, and then they just never really got into is it fifth gear? I can't drive, so I'm going to assume that that's the phrase. I guess like there are a lot of factors involved here. Fatigue certainly is one of them, but just generally, there are things where you can see where like fatigue clearly has a part to play. Passes don't reach their man, people are getting outpaced. And like Hoffenheim's attack, they had some really quick players. But for the most part, this just looked like a team that just mentally wasn't there. And I guess maybe fatigue does certainly impact that as well. But they just looked so... It's hard to say, but this team looked mentally tired, which I guess makes sense. But it's difficult. But this was always going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right in your assessment, for the most part, that this is largely a team issue. However, I think there are a couple players that you could probably point out that maybe it's affecting them a little bit more than others. And Garrett, I know you didn't get to watch the game, but if I was to tell you that, in my opinion, in my view, Jerome Boateng and especially David Alaba were the biggest, I guess, offenders in the area of kind of shutting off, of not playing up to their standard, would you totally be surprised? Because I think especially with Alaba, we've seen him drop off in form a lot over the past month or so. Even right before the Champions League final and in the Champions League final, he didn't seem like he was quite at his best. And so maybe do you think that the contract negotiations and everything going on there with his future being up in the air and that seeming to only be moving in a negative direction for Bayern, not in a positive direction, do you think that's affecting his play?
I mean, I think it definitely... It seems to be, anyway. I mean, he hasn't really played well since the Champions League final, and not that there's been a ton of games since then, but he seems, I guess, like you said, just kind of mentally not there. And I can't say that I blame him, as long as this has been dragging on and as ugly as, you know, some of the public comments have been, I imagine that it can really start to weigh on you. So it's really not super surprising to hear that Alaba was struggling today. And I think that, you know, we've kind of kicked around the ideas like, does this kind of signal that maybe Lucas Hernandez is the guy going forward for a little while? And I think it may be, unfortunately. Or they just need to get his contract settled so he can stop thinking about it. But that doesn't, like you said, it doesn't look very good there. I think that the mental fatigue is probably even greater than the physical fatigue, for sure. I was just looking at the stats from the game, and Bayern had 72% possession, but were outshot 17-16. And that to me screams, and only on two counters. So it's not like they were just turning the ball over in bad positions. They were just not getting to it. And like you said, Tim, they've kind of been playing this way for a long time now, where they just kind of allow pressure. They invite pressure early, and then they just kind of turn it on and really just leave the other team in the dust. And I think that there's, I have a theory anyway, that what it does is it kind of forces teams to kind of come out of sitting back. It doesn't allow them to sit back early, and then it's kind of harder to adjust back into that. So it's kind of a way of making sure that it opens them up a little bit. But I think when you have played so many games in the past, you know, few weeks, I mean, I think Lewandowski even said after the Super Cup that they didn't even really celebrate because they were so tired. I mean, I think there is really something there. And not to take anything away from Hoffenheim, because obviously Hoffenheim had to, you know, had to take their chances, and they certainly did. But I think that this team is tired, and that's what makes it so concerning, that it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of activity in terms of new players coming in to make this squad deeper. And in fact, it seems like we're getting thinner because of several names that are being rumored to be leaving. So it's the game itself is like, yeah, frustrating to lose 4-1 to Hoffenheim. But you expect that you're going to lose a game in a calendar year. It makes sense. But the worrying sign is that I don't know that there's going to be a lot of opportunities for rest, and that's what they seem like they really need.
Yeah, you make a great point. I don't think simply losing to Hoffenheim is really, I guess I'm trying to think of a way to say it. It's really not that big of a deal in and of itself. Like you said, Bayern's winning streak, and even on top of that their not losing streak, was going to fall apart eventually. All, you know, all good things come to an end. And it's no big deal. We lose to Hoffenheim fairly often recently. They're kind of a bogey side. So in that sense, it was almost expected. But it's just kind of the manner in which the loss came. And then also everything, like you said, that's going on in the background. And so we will get to, definitely going to get to some of that transfer talk in a minute. You know, guys heading in and out. But Garrett, you brought up the name Lucas Hernandez. And Tim, I know that's a player that you've kind of been a big proponent of recently. As you know, David Alaba has sort of made that shift to center back, and Lucas Hernandez, his name has continually come up in the media, suggesting that he could be leaving Bayern, but he's just stayed and fought. So I'm interested to hear your take on these back line issues. And do you think, see, for me, Niklas Süle should be a guaranteed starter at center back. So do you think maybe Hernandez should now be the second guy, the second option alongside Süle? To play in the big games, I guess, even to play in the cup against Dortmund on Wednesday.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think from that back line, excluding like Alphonso Davies, I think Niklas Süle is the number one to choose for, at least certainly to choose between the centre-backs. As for Lucas Hernandez, I think I never would have started Alaba this game. I think if not for the whole like exhaustion, fatigue, like, okay, he's played a lot of games recently. There's the whole contract thing. We've got to appease him to make sure he's happy. He was shocking against Sevilla. He was truly abysmal. This, I would probably say that was maybe his worst game in a Bayern shirt, followed very nicely by the game today. Like, he has been really quite awful. And I think Hernandez more than deserves to take that role. Maybe not permanently. I think I'm a big fan of competition. I think it's hugely important. And so to have, you know, people that are capable of putting in world-class performances in multiple positions, that's only a good thing. But at the same time, you have to be realistic. Like, you can't have Alaba Hernandez playing every other game. Like, that's a bit ridiculous. But I think considering how well Hernandez played against Sevilla, like, he was electric. Like, he was going up and down. So he was playing left back, and I prefer seeing somebody like Davies play at left back, where you know that you're definitely going to get that forward momentum. But I think Hernandez did really, really well, because he was able to kind of facilitate the gap that was missing with Davies not being there, which is very hard to do. Like, Davies is one of the best left backs in the world. The fact that Hernandez was able to slot in so seamlessly was very commendable. And I think considering how he played, he more than deserved his position on the pitch today. I'm kind of hoping that the reason why Flick decided to choose Boateng and Alaba, kind of, you know, almost like second choice centre backs for today, is because you've got the Super Cup coming up, and maybe he wants to, you know, put out as strong a team as possible for there, which maybe he rested Lewandowski, somebody that maybe doesn't necessarily need rest because he's always fit. He's fit all the time. But I think Lucas Hernandez fully deserved to start, at least not start, if not start, then at least feature for more of the game. There should have been something at either like half time or like somewhere in the second half that suggested that neither of these defenders are good enough and they need somebody with a bit more brawn. Especially against somebody like Kramaric, who's always going to be very tenacious and fight until the end. Having somebody like Hernandez on the pitch, somebody that comes from that school of Simeone, you really need somebody like that. I was hugely disappointed that he didn't play, and I'm sure he's disappointed as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think one thing that stood out as well was Bayern kept getting caught out in sort of one-on-one situations. And if you've watched closely a lot of David Alaba in the past, he's really not that good of a defender in one-on-one situations. He sort of had the Alphonso Davies tactic of, when he was younger, I can be a little bit faster than them and that works out. But he's really just not the best when it comes to timing these one-on-one tackles. And Lucas Hernandez, on the other hand, is someone that you can really trust to complete those one-on-one tackles. And yeah, I think at halftime it would have been completely sensible, and I think it was definitely called for, to sub off one of, if not both, of the center backs that started the match in favor for bringing on either Sula or Hernandez. And if Flick is resting them for the game against Dortmund on Wednesday, then that's fine. But I would almost argue that the Bundesliga, winning these Bundesliga games, is a little bit more important even than winning the German or winning the cup on Wednesday against Dortmund. Well, I don't want it to be all doom and gloom talking about the game from today. So I do want to ask you, Tim, was there anything positive that you saw from the game? Is there anything that you think that Hansi Flick and the team could kind of take away in a positive light from today's loss?
If there's one thing, it's that there are some players in the squad that work best when they're angry. And those are guys like Kimmich, who even like, you know, quite a poor performance, Joshua Kimmich is still somebody that shines as somebody that's just never prepared to quit. And I think that's incredible. It's so clear to see why so many people think that he's going to be the next captain, or certainly one of the captains. I think he's such a great presence to have on the pitch. But you know, he's played 120 minutes earlier in the week. He played 90 minutes this week, played 90 minutes the week before. I don't know how he can do it, but he's there. Like, he's always there, and he's always prepared to run and ask for the ball. I think having guys like him, guys like Lewandowski, and also I think Goretzka is kind of turning into a player a bit like that as well. So it's kind of exciting that we're catching Dortmund, having had games and having had a chance to kind of experience that, I guess, humiliation, for want of a better term. Because normally this game occurs before the season starts, and it's Dortmund's chance to kind of get one over. Like, they did that whole post on Twitter last year where it's like one of four achievement unlocked or something like that. This is kind of their tournament, because it's like they catch Bayern when they haven't really practiced anything. Like, this is a new team, a new manager, a new system, etc. This is going to be Bayern very angry, I hope. That's kind of like the positives to take from it in my eyes.
I'm a little bit disappointed Dortmund never gave an update on, you know, whether or not they unlocked the rest of those trophies at the end of the season. You know, I wanted to see how that final image looked, because I have a feeling it probably looked exactly the same.
Yeah, I don't think they won any of them, actually. Yeah. I'll need to confirm that. I'm fairly certain they didn't win anything else.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're right. We'll confirm. But let's not talk about the negatives anymore, at least the negative from today's game, because I do think Bayern will probably bounce back, and it'll just be a little bit of a blip on Hansi Flick's Bayern tenure. But Garrett, you started kind of talking about what's going on in the transfer window earlier, and so I think it's appropriate for us to just dive right in, because there's about a week left in the transfer window, and there is a whole lot of work to be done, it would seem, for this Bayern side. Since we've last recorded, Thiago has officially made his move to Liverpool. We obviously wish him the best. It's something that we've seen coming for a long time. What we didn't totally see coming is what has happened with Sergiño Dest in the past week. About a week ago, it would seem pretty clear that Bayern were going to sign Sergiño Dest. They'd have their backup right back. Things were starting to get moving in the transfer window. And then Barcelona comes along, and obviously they've got that great relationship with Ajax. Some things happened, and all of a sudden it seems Dest is going to be a Barcelona player within the next few days. So, Garrett, a few questions on that. Obviously, you and I, as Americans, have both got an invested interest in Dest. And he's also a player that you and I have been talking about for a while on this podcast before he was ever even linked with the move to Bayern Munich. So how disappointing is it to see Bayern miss out on this transfer after, you know, for so long it seemed like he was kind of our main target at right back, and then it's starting to look like it would actually go through?
Well, I've never wanted him anyway, so I'm gonna just put that up. Now, I, you know, we've talked about it a little bit. It's a little hard to be too upset with him as a 19-year-old. And someone, you know, he's in that Ajax system. You mentioned that they have a great relationship with Barcelona. He's interested in, or I think he said he's a fan of Barcelona, and you know, he gets an opportunity to play with Messi. I mean, there's a, and he could probably be their starting right back, you know, right away. So it's hard to fault him. It is disappointing given that, you know, Bayern were really the first big club, I believe, that really showed a serious interest in him. And he's a player that just hasn't really, he hasn't done anything of note to kind of take the attitude that we've kind of seen from him in this whole thing. And obviously we're going to color it that way, being Bayern fans. But, you know, we talked about it too, about how he, you know, he was a, they were, they, there was a, kind of a fight over him between the Netherlands and the U.S. for which national team he's going to play for. And then there was this, now there's this fight over the, which club he's going to play for. And it, and again, so it'd be hard for a 19-year-old to not kind of let that go to your head. But there's just some things about the whole situation that just kind of soured me on him. Now, that being said, he is 19, and I think, you know, if one day in the future he decides to become a Bayern player or wants to come to Bayern, I won't hold it against him that when he was 19 he spurned Bayern to go to Barcelona. But it's disappointing from that standpoint. But it's also really just disappointing because we've been calling out for a fullback since this podcast began, and I know we've all kind of felt like that. It was so close, and it felt like awesome. We got a guy who could do the job in a pinch, and he could develop into a really good right back for Bayern, and have that CONCACAF, you know, fullback pairing of Davies and Dest. It would have been awesome. But, you know, sometimes you just let the dreams get too big, and then fly too close to the sun, and then you fall down the hill, or what, I don't know how the story goes.
Yeah,
it's upsetting from the standpoint. It feels like a loss of a player more than it does missing out on a player, because it felt like we were banking on having that extra guy, and with all the other stuff going on, it just feels like that's another loss after what was an awesome end to the 2019-2020 season, you know. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're right. I'm not at all upset with Dest. You know, you can only blame him so much for making his decision. What is the most disappointing for me is the fact that we could have signed him, you know, weeks ago, but our board just kept delaying. And then all of a sudden Barcelona sells Nelson Semedo, and they're like, oh, now we really need to move. We really need to try to sign him. And sure enough, what happens? He's going to Barcelona now, when we could have got this deal done several weeks ago. So yeah, it's disappointing in that fact. Unfortunately, there are other right backs available, other right backs on the market. And so, Tim, I'm going to come to you. Do you know anything significant about Max Aarons from Norwich City? Because I know that he's probably the next right back that the board is going to turn to. And I know that a lot of people rate him, if not as highly as Dest, pretty close to as highly as Dest, at least going forward. So what do you think about Aarons? Is he a good, reliable backup option?
I don't know. I've kind of made like a very concerted effort to not watch Norwich City play.
Good man.
I could see no benefit, really. Despite having aspirations of being a football journalist, I was like, nah, it's not for me. There is a limit. Having consulted with my agents, which is my two friends that are obsessed with fantasy football, he is apparently a very talented English right back that's kind of gone under the radar because of guys like that guy that's at Liverpool and Wan-Bissaka and the Reece James from Chelsea. So I think he obviously has potential. I know that it's not just Bayern that are interested in him. I think PSG are probably interested in him. But then there's kind of that core group of teams who are just really easy, like filler names to put in any headline. It's like, oh yeah, PSG, Juventus and Man City are all interested. They probably not. But I think if that's like hugely exciting for me. And obviously there's a huge influx of really talented English players coming through. And if he's touted to be one of them, then, you know, who am I to kind of go against the grain? I think the more English people, the better. Like, we've seen fantastic things from Jamal Musiala. I think I'm so excited to see what he can do for the team. It's good to see that he was able to play today as well. But yeah, I can't really comment on him, on Max Aarons at all, other than what my friends say, but they might be lying to me, as they have done before on this podcast.
Yeah, the last time your friend,
some truly awful people.
Exactly. If your friends were always correct, Callum Hudson-Odoi would be playing for Bayern Munich. So maybe we should take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. By the way, I'm happy that you brought up Jamal Musiala. I think he definitely deserves a shout out for becoming Bayern's youngest ever Bundesliga goal scorer, but also just looking pretty solid whenever he's come in and played. And that does give us a good transition, because he was brought into the lineup again by Hansi Flick today. He even got a few minutes, and it was probably most surprising that he came in to the lineup ahead of Mikel Quissons. And right before we started recording this podcast, reports emerged from L'Equipe in France and then Fabrizio Romano suggesting that Quissons could be on his way to Leeds United. Definitely an interesting development, because Javi Martinez is also in the background, apparently nearing a move back to Athletic Bilbao. So with both of them moving on, Garrett, let's stop right there. First of all, with Quissons potentially leaving, do you think that would be a good move for Bayern, you know, to have just bought him a year ago and now already be looking to sell him on to Leeds United for 20 million euros?
I mean, I don't know. Because they didn't, what they paid around 12 million, it looks like, for him from Gladbach. And so it's a little, I think if they could sell him for 20, that's more than a good deal, because he really hasn't played much. He's shown some potential, and obviously it'd be nice to have players like that in the squad. But he's also shown a few worrying signs, and kind of the same thing that kind of led to his departure from Gladbach, you know, in that he was getting playing time there, but wasn't getting as much as he wanted, and then kind of started to, I don't want to say throw fits, but he kind of became a problem in small ways and maybe even larger ways that I may not be aware of. But based on things that we've seen coming out of, you know, reports that we've been rumors that we've heard about his actions off the pitch as a result of not being able to get on the pitch, I think that it's probably a good deal on the face of it. Again, the problem we keep coming up is, well, we can't sell everybody unless we're just saying that, you know, this year is going to be, we won the treble and we won the Super Cup. So, you know, we're just going to concede the rest of the year and, you know, see you guys in the 2021-2022 season. That's my only concern, because, like you said, on the face of it, selling him for 20 after buying him for 12 in this economy is pretty good, I think. And he doesn't seem to have a place in this squad, really, with young guys like Musiala coming in ahead of him already. It's early season, but still, I can't imagine that's super confidence-inducing.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of good points. I think Quissons is obviously a talented player. I mean, we've seen that plenty of times on the pitch, but like you said, his off the field, I don't want to say antics, because it's not been quite that bad, but the way he carries himself off the field is really kind of a cause for concern for me. So a couple months ago, he was very upset about not playing, which is understandable, but a young guy at a club like this, you can't act out like that. It's always been kind of obvious that Hansi Flick doesn't fully trust him. And then today, before the reports even came out, he wasn't on the bench. He was at the game, though, on his phone. And someone on Twitter said something about Mikel Quissons deserves better than this. And he liked the tweet. Like, during the game, he liked the tweet that said that. So that was really upsetting for me. So when I saw the reports shortly afterward that said he could be on his way out, number one, I'm thinking, okay, that obviously makes a lot of sense right now. Number two, well, you know, why not? If this is how he, if he's so entitled that he thinks he deserves to be in the starting lineup, deserves to make the squad, then, you know, maybe it is best for him to move on. Now, of course, this is where I'm going to come to you, Tim, because first you can give your opinion on what you think of him. But if he is going to leave, and if Javier Martinez is going with him, and if subpar performances from Corentin Tolisso like we saw today are what we can expect, do you think, okay, maybe now it is time we start looking for another addition into the midfield, because there just comes a point where Kimmich and Goretzka really just can't do it all on their own?
No, but you know that they're certainly going to try to. My views on Mikhail Kisons, I've never been overly fond of him. There's just something about him that kind of like rubs me the wrong way. I can't really describe it.
It's because he's not Renato Sanchez.
That is genuinely.
But he's acting a lot like him. I want to say
fairness to Renato Sanchez, I think what Kisons is doing is a lot worse. I think Sanchez always carried himself fairly well at the club. I think if Kisons, and we interrupted Tim completely, but I think Kisons is, in the short time that he's been here, has been far worse off the pitch than Renato Sanchez ever was.
I would agree.
Yeah, I think like the worst that Sanchez ever did off the pitch was, there was an Instagram post where he was like playing with like a huge stack of cash, and people were like, that's not very good, like that's very bad. Meanwhile, Bayern were like celebrating Lewandowski buying a private jet. I'm like, it's right. Not the same, but it's basically the same. Like, it's this almost like conspicuous consumption. I read The Great Gatsby when I was younger. I know what I'm talking about. Like, it's, for the most part, this was a guy that was, like, all of his interviews were just like, I really want to play football. Like, he wasn't, like, liking, like, really slanderous posts or anything. Like, okay, I think he was the first professional to like the post that said that Niko Kovac got sacked. But, like, that's fine. I'm sure he has his reasons. But, like, this is two completely different attitudes in my eyes. And I think that is probably partly why I've never been overly fond of Cuisance as a player, is that his position should have been Renato Sanchez. And, like, now you look at Sanchez and he's fantastic. He's doing fantastically for Lille. They're doing really, really well in the French league. Whereas this guy's come in and he's complaining. Like, okay, he wasn't getting picked at Gladbach because he had like a couple of attitude problems. Why on earth did he think that he was going to bench one of Kimmich, Thiago, Goretzka or Müller? Or, like, okay, he got his minutes like towards the end of the season and he did quite well there. But he didn't really do enough in that time to say, oh, maybe this is the guy to take over Thiago. Like, I don't know who he takes over. If he was to take over anybody, I personally am very much of the opinion that if you're going to be representing the club and you know, carrying that badge, whether you're in the squad or not, don't be on your phone during the day. That's just general like social etiquette. Mm-hmm. Like, you're at work, like you're not supposed to be on your phone or doing anything like that. So if he is of the opinion that like he deserves this playing time, even if he does deserve it, I don't think he does. Because he's shown this, frankly, atrocious attitude that I cannot remember another player doing that at the club. So maybe Shaqiri. I think Shaqiri's probably like the closest that it comes, because there was this whole thing with Jadon Shaqiri saying like, oh, I want to play right now. Collins Rumenig is saying this is a player that we're banking on for the future. And then Shaqiri's went on Twitter to say, I live in the present. And it's like, okay, cool, you don't play for us anymore, you're going to Inter Milan, bye. Like, it was utterly needless, and that's exactly how it went. Maybe it's just the number 11 shirt, maybe it's just got something to do with number 11, quite possibly, because like Hammers was a bit moody last time, wasn't he?
He was, obviously. Yeah,
was Olic an angry person?
Douglas Costa definitely had the entitlement gene, and they're all left-footed.
They are.
Well,
what is going on?
I think we're on to something.
Turns out it's cursed. That is Okay, we've cracked this whole thing wide open here.
You heard it here first on the Super Bayern podcast.
Right.
This is what we do. But yeah, so for the most part, I can't really see like where he fits in. But then on top of my belief is that I think he should be sold because this is frankly not on. But then with that, who have you got in the middle? You've got Tolisso. He didn't do a very good job. I'm kind of willing to hold off on criticism though, because this is his first game back in goodness how long.
Fair.
But at the same time, there have been like a number of kind of shaky moments. Like the whole thing against Real Madrid in his first season, he gifted Spurs his first goal, I think.
Also fair.
In the 7-2. And on top of that, I know he can't help it, but he's ridiculously injury prone. Like he went down after like quite a bad tackle after about 2 minutes, so he can't really help that. But there's not an awful lot going in his favour. I would certainly use this opportunity to get somebody new, whether that's a starter or somebody that can be what they want Cuisance to be. Apologies if that's not at all how you pronounce his name, but I didn't do very well at French when I was younger. But I think it would be important to find somebody that can fill in that gap, because in my eyes, I don't want it to be him.
Yeah, so I think we're probably on the same page that if there's a $20 million offer for him, probably the time to accept it. Now, Garrett, one more question before we start to wrap up. Obviously, I don't think this is necessarily a player who's going to fix all of our midfield issues, but surprisingly, in the past week or so, Mario Götze has been fairly strongly linked with a move back to Bayern. Now, of course, Hansi Flick and the rest of the Bayern higher-ups have sort of played it down, but they have not really outright denied it. So Sebastian, if he was on, would definitely tell us absolutely not, he doesn't want Mario Götze back at Bayern. But all things considered, and especially if Cuisance is actually about to leave, do you think Mario Götze on a free transfer back to Bayern would maybe not be that bad of a deal?
I think it's gonna end up maybe being the option. Running out of time to get anybody in the transfer market, and so you're going to have to end up with some. I think that's probably about the best pre-transfer that you're going to find at this point in the game. I think the thing is, again, I'm not, like you said, Tim, I wouldn't be too terribly panicky on the way Tolisso played today, because I think we've seen him look like an amazing player in the past. You know, all those things, all those issues and those moments of shakiness that you mentioned, you know, aside, we've seen him look like he was going to take that position and make it his own. Then he promptly got injured. And so it's like this, I think he's kind of in the same category as Coman, where it's like a little, you can trust him in spurts, but maybe don't rely so heavily on him. And I think as a backup in the midfield, I think that's fine. But with Götze, I think you're getting a player that isn't going to be, you know, clearly isn't going to be what all the hype was around him when he came to Bayern the first time. I think that it could do him some good to kind of be in a situation where he doesn't have that pressure this time, and he'd be playing with a manager that he's really comfortable with and who's really comfortable with him. And I think maybe Sebastian even said it when we were talking about it in the chat, it'd be low risk, it'd be kind of low reward, but like it's low risk. And I think that Götze as a fourth, fifth midfielder, you could certainly do a lot worse. So I think it could come to that. I don't know if we'll see it before the transfer window closes. But I wouldn't be opposed. I have no reason to despise the guy other than just he underperformed when he was here. But I would be on board, especially just because we just need bodies at this point. We just need a warm body to stick in the field at times, and he would provide that for sure.
funny enough, I was never really the biggest fan of Mario Götze when he was at Bayern. It was kind of a transfer that I'd say I was pretty much against, but now I would be fairly happy to see him make a return to Bayern Munich, if for no other reason than what you just talked about. You know, low risk, relatively low to medium reward, but I mean, there's virtually no risk involved with signing him unless he demands, you know, some outrageous amount of playing time, which I don't really think that he's going to.
He doesn't have the leverage to do that at this point.
Right. And I don't think he's the type of person to do it either.
Sure. So, sure.
Anyway, there's a week left in the transfer window. And if I had to guess, I bet we see one or two more players head to the exit door from Bayern Munich. And I at least hope we see at least two make their way to the club. But that's all the time that we have for this one. If you've enjoyed listening, or if you're a regular fan of the podcast and you haven't already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, there's a few ways you can do that. First, you can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at superbayernpod and get in touch with us there. All of our episodes can be found wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.